Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Hey, we're back to have Dr. Tom Rayner with us again for this very special episode of Revitalize and Replant. Man, you started this podcast way back in the 1960s, and then you brought me onto it. And
I started this podcast in the 60s?
Yeah, you were doing it before there was even a podcast. You were so ahead of the curve. But now I remember the first time I came on your podcast, Jonathan Howe read my little book, and you'd never heard of me. Nobody'd ever heard of me. And
I had heard of you, Mark Clifton. Don't you
okay.
lie.
He brought the book to you and said, this is probably worth looking at. And I drove down to the Lifeway and went up to the top floor and met you and was on your podcast, and we just became fast friends. You really did embrace me, and I appreciate it. So we did this podcast together for 5 years or something like that, and had a great time. But today you are a guest on your Revitalize and Replant. You gave me the podcast. You said, here it is, just take it and run with it. So anyway,
it was a good season, Mark. It really, really was. And you try to flatter. Well, you do flatter me. You don't try to flatter me. But the reality of it is, you're the voice that makes Revitalize and Replant what it is. When they hear from you, they pastors and other church leaders, they know that they're not hearing fluff. They know that they're hearing the real thing, and that you're being honest and transparent with them. Look, if Rayner had done Revitalize and Replant, we would have shut it up after 3 months. The fact that it went 5 years with me and you and it's still going is not a tribute to Rayner, but to Clifton.
Well, thank you. I deeply appreciate that. All right. And by the way, I am in a replant now, another one. We did Linwood, and that's I've sort of turned that over to a guy, and I'm in the midst of an urban replant now with a mega church. I'm actually a campus. And that's a whole new experience for me to work as a campus of a mega church. You know, I'm not always the best person to work under direct supervision.
No, I didn't know that, Mark.
So I'm learning. So I want to talk about mega churches in a minute. What is the future of the mega church in North America? You've been writing some things about that. I think it's an important topic. You know, my whole generation in the 70s and 80s, we were defined by mega churches. That was what we were all looking for. I remember John Marshall, the pastor of Second Baptist Springfield, told me one time, and I asked him, can I quote you in my book? And he said, absolutely. So it's in the book, Reclaiming Glory. John said, when he was a young man, they all looked to Thomas Road Church in Lynchburg and said, if we could start a Thomas Road Church in every city in North America by the end of the 20th century, we could transform North America. He said, we started a church like Thomas Road in every city in North America, and we did not transform North America. So talk to me a little bit about the future and of the mega church in North America. Where is it going?
I give credit a lot to son Sam Rayner, who's done a lot of the research on mega churches, and he's presented a lot of data to our team at Church Answers as he helps us lead Church Answers. So if I start saying some things that sound like they're coming from the old Rayner, they probably have a lot of origin in the younger, middle-aged Rayner. That's really weird.
My son, middle-aged.
I have three teenage grandchildren.
Oh my goodness.
I am so
Great grandpa is in your future in the not too distant future.
Oh, Mark, death is in my future not too long from now. So that's where I am. Mega churches. All right, let's define it. Let's make sure we're all on the same page. I go by the classic definition of 2,000 average worship attendance, all people included, kids, adults, etc. It's amazing, Mark, when I speak to people outside of, say, the SBC tribe, they don't have the same attendance measurements we do, or whatever you want to say. And so we have to define it. And what is the future of mega churches? Well, the future of mega churches is that there are going to be a lot fewer of them. Are they going to disappear? Nope. But there's going to be a lot fewer of them. How do we know that? How can we be prophetic without having people throwing rocks at us and saying you had a false prophecy? Because it's already happening. I mean, it's pretty easy to take a linear regression and just move it forward. I mean, I can do that. I did that for the SBC on its path of baptisms in 2005. And I said, things aren't looking good, folks. We need to do something. Mm-hmm. In an article I wrote that nobody read called a Resurgence Not Yet Realized. And you can look at it. Number of megachurches are fewer. We also think that there are fewer than the megachurch. Many of the megachurch data scientists are statisticians, not data scientists, say, because we are uncovering some of this, and there is a redefinition of megachurches taking place randomly, 1,500, 1,200.
You know, right.
So I've
noticed that. Yep.
So that this is a true megachurch today. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about a true 2,000 average attendance in worship every week or more, in a that number has declined. I wish I had precise numbers for you, Mark. Sam may have them, but it is a significant decline. Why? That's the million-dollar question. Why? I think it's best to ask the question, why did they form? Because they were an anomaly when they formed. Sure, there were Spurgeons, there was Moody, and there were these outlier examples of large churches, but they were not common. Why did they form? You and I are to either get the credit or the blame for that, Mark.
You're being baby boomers.
Baby boomers, those born between 1946 and 1964. Those 76 million, of which this is a random number. I mean, I've got statistics for 86% of all things, so this is a random number. for which 90% are spoiled brats. Now that's
amen.
That's but baby boomers have had life given to them that previous generations did not. My dad was the World War II generation, also called the Greatest Generation. I've got his flight plan behind me right now for D-Day, where he was shooting at other planes trying to protect his boys on Normandy Beach. I mean, my dad was a clear example of someone who focused on others. He focused on his country. He focused on his church. He focused on his family. They raised us not to do that, Mark, generally. They basically said, we want our kids, me and you, to have it and to have it now. And so the marketing world caught on to that, and they started catering to baby boomers. I'm going to give you a jingle that you may not remember, but one of the classic jingles was early, probably in the 70s, when Burger King discovered the baby boomers.
Yep.
And they had this jingle, "Have it your way."
That's right.
They went against McDonald's that was mass producing, and you know, if you wanted it without onions, you had to go into a corner and wait for years to get your just ketchup cheeseburger. Burger King said, "Have it your way." Special orders don't upset us.
Yes.
The lettuce, all the pickles, all the lettice, special
hold
orders.
The pickle, hold the lettuce, special orders.
Yes, you have it your way. So that jingle is emblematic of baby boomers.
Okay.
What did we do to attract people to the mega church? Well, obviously there was high quality. There was mostly good preaching. There was great music. But the theme of it was, come to our church. Don't worry about doing anything. We're here just to make you comfortable. We don't want you uncomfortable. We don't want a commitment. And therefore, this is for you. We're going to meet your need. And guess what? The first time the church did not meet their need, they moved to another church or they moved out. Transfer growth became pervasive. And mega churches grew by drawing other members from other churches where they could let them have it their way until they didn't. Yeah. And then they would move along.
I don't have any statistics or research on anything. I just live by my gut and my intuition. So that's one of my gut intuitions is that my generation like big things, right? We like big things. That's why we start the big department stores, Home Depot, big grocery stores. We like big things. So we like big churches, right? But certainly, like my kids and my grandkids, they don't look for a big church. They want to find, they like the, and they don't even like the big chain restaurants. They like the more mom and pop boutique, one-off kind of unique restaurants, unique stores. I think there's a shift in that too. Am I right at all?
Oh, no, you're totally right. Totally. Not just at all. You're totally right. There is a shift toward more individuality instead of institutionality. The baby boomer generation was the institutional generation. We supported government. We supported large churches. institutionality is fading away. That's one of the key reasons denominations are declining, is because of lack of trust or even desire for the institution. Now there is a desire for individuality, and it is perceived by many, Gen X, Gen Z, Gen Y, it's perceived by many millennials, it is perceived by many of those people to be best found in smaller churches.
So, and you know, I was thinking the other day, of course, it's so expensive to build now, but you know, when I, in the 80s, even 90s, I just had a lot of people around me that were building large mega churches and they were expanding. And I don't know, I can't think of, I mean, there are probably some out there. I don't know many people building huge mega campuses anymore either.
Well, that's not just anecdotal. We have a good relationship with a design build firm called Brown Church Development Group, and I just stay in touch with them. They're a national firm, and they're, you know, they're one of the big boys that do church buildings. And, right. And they're telling me, you know, Tom, where we are seeing most of our business come is refurbishing, not building, especially not building large buildings.
Right.
They're seeing it right up close.
And we all know that some of the mega churches that built really, really large at the height of their growth now realize those buildings are 30, 40 years old, and they're becoming really expensive to keep going with capital improvements. Everything needs to be upgraded, and yet the attendance is declining. Is that not true?
Oh, deferred maintenance is a huge issue in these larger churches. You and I know it's an issue in the smaller churches that are struggling, Mark, but it's dollar-wise, it's a huge issue in the big churches.
So median church size, now we've talked about mega, you wrote some stuff again about median church size. Southern Baptist median church is 67, I think you said, something like that. Half of them have more than 67 on Sunday, half will have less. I think there was some information you wrote about among all Protestants at the turn of the century in the year 2000, median church size, I'm just spitballing here, was around 130. Today it's around 70, pretty much, something like that.
The last number, which is Pew Research data, and they have good data because they do thousands of churches in their database. Their latest number was 65, and that would have been either 2018 or 2019, my recollection. I know it's pre-COVID, so 65. Right. So 65 is the national median. And just as you said, Mark, median is 50% on one side, 50% on the other, a number I prefer, a measurement I prefer much more than average that can be skewed one way or the other. Now, here's what we're seeing. We're seeing that number go down. I have guesstimated, I don't have a database, I have guesstimated that once we get another massive study out, which may be this year, once we get another massive study out, the number is going to be in the 40s.
Do you remember what it was around the turn, around the year 2000?
Around the year 2000, it had been about 130, 140.
Yeah. So this is, I don't think people fully understand the, in my mind, this is one of the most cataclysmic changes in my lifetime. And I don't think we really understand it. I don't know, good, bad, or indifferent. It's just a change when you go from 130 as the median to maybe, like you said, in the year or two, 50 or 40. That's help me with that. What's that mean?
That means a lot of churches are headed toward closure, Mark, because if 40, my number was 40. Sam and I got into this father-son debate. No way it's going to go that large. So what do you think it's going to be? He said 52. I said, we're going to argue about 12 people, Sam. Let's just wait and see what the data comes out. What that means is, first of all, let me say what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that a small church is an unhealthy church. So be clear on that. But it means that if a church has gone from 120 to 40 or 30 in a short time, there's probably some problems there.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing, a whole new category of churches. Sam hates this category that I created called moribund churches. A moribund is somebody that is very unhealthy that may die soon. The good news is we can identify them now before they call us up and say, we got to shut the doors. The bad news is they're probably not going to call us up.
Yeah, a term you coined that I use all the time because it's a harsh term and I don't want to be identified with it. But I say, as Dr. Rainer says, I always say that. When I say, as Henry Blackaby says, it's always something positive. But when I say, as Dr. Rainer says, Henry Blackaby says, Jesus has a plan for your church. But Dr. Rainer says, your church is in a death spiral. I talk about the death spiral once you reach a certain point. And it depends based on culturally context where you are and all those kinds of things. You can be 35 people and actually be very healthy.
Exactly.
But you're right. If you were 135 3 years ago and you're 35 today, you're probably in a death spiral. And it may be very difficult to come out of that.
Our common friend, Jonathan Howe, said something similar about me, Mark. Autopsy of a Deceased Church, one of my little books I wrote about looking at churches that died, is in a big rebound right now. I mean, it was published 12 years ago, and it feels like a new book in terms of...
That's because I've been promoting it everywhere I go. So that's
that's probably it.
Actually, I do. I think the best book you've written, and I haven't read the most recent one on prayer. We need to talk about that before we quit. But the best book that I'm thinking is The Anatomy of a Revived Church. And I'm going to be teaching that in Montana. I teach that a lot. That's a great book. So the two together, Autopsy of a Deceased Church and Anatomy of a Revived Church, you must have those in your library. And really, your church needs to read those. So,
well, Jonathan got the URL when he was with us, churchmortician.com. And it's now forwarded to Church Answers because of
okay.
So, so if you put churchmortician.com, you're going to Church Answers right away.
All right. Well, back to the issue, which is a serious issue. You were talking about a small church is not necessarily an unhealthy church. We all know that. But man, when we see the median size go from 130 to 50, in a culture that's continually, or 40, that's continually, and you're right, that means you're going to have more and more churches close. And we've just said that mega churches aren't getting any bigger. They're struggling too. What's going on, Dr. Rainer?
We're having a shift of the center of Christianity, Mark. I mean, it was happening before all these dire numbers, but we have now finally followed the path of many of the European countries of a secular culture instead of a Christian culture. And depending, I really want to do a little more analysis on where we would deem the center of Christianity now to be. Is it, you know, I tend to think it's more South America than Africa, but I'm not ready for data to give you data on that. But we have shifted. I mean, it is not cliche to say we are no longer a Christian nation. We're not a nation that is made up of healthy churches. It is something that every major region of the world goes through at different times. I wish it didn't. I wish revival would come back to us, but that is what is happening in the North American church.
I'd heard one time that it may have been, I don't want to say for sure he was Dr. Aiken. It may not have been, but it was someone that I respected who had done some historical look at the center of Christianity, like you said, where it has been in the past. And it never, for whatever reason, it never returns there. If it was, you know, Middle East and Egypt and then Asia, I mean, and then rather than Europe and then North America, once it's gone, it goes somewhere else. It has never really returned there. I do think, you know, when we go out and we talk about church revitalization, you know, this is incredibly simplistic, but, you know, I said, when my great-grandfather was planting churches, it was like University of Kansas playing every game in Allen Fieldhouse. I mean, everybody in the stands was cheering. You had to still play the game, and you might lose once in a while, but everybody was cheering for you. I said, you know, my dad and I come along, and it's like KU playing every game at a neutral site. Mm. But today, it's like KU playing every game at Duke. And that it's not that the gospel isn't stronger than that. It's that we don't know how to adapt to that kind of hostility, and we're not well-received in the community. It's a shift that... Yeah, that's a really good word. I'd love to have you come back and we'll talk more about the implications of that in ministry and in church life, in our buildings and the way we use them, how big they are. There's so much, Dr. Rainer, on that issue. What would you say to sum that up? What do you say to churches when they're looking at the future in North America?
First thing I would say is the issue of hostility is perceived and not reality.
Oh, that's a good word. So it's not like playing at Duke.
No, it's not. But we have assumed that to be the case, and therefore we act that way, which is means it's not much need to go into this mission field. It's not any need. Way back, I did a study in a book called The Unchurched Next Door, and I haven't updated it, but I think it would be pretty close. I sent our research team out from Southern Seminary, and they interviewed people who were not in church. And only 5% of them had an antagonistic view of church and Christianity. And I know you can say, well, it shifted significantly then. Anecdotally, I can tell you it has not. Receptivity to the gospel is still high. Receptivity to inviting someone to church is still high. We are assuming that that is the case. But this is my final word, Mark, and then I know you need to cut me off. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 9. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion upon them because they were confused and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. He said to his disciples, "The harvest is great, but the workers are few. So pray to the Lord who's in charge of the harvest. Ask him to send more workers into his field." Jesus didn't say pray for us to don't pray for opportunities as much as you're praying for people to go to those opportunities.
Right.
I think what Jesus said in the first century, if I understand my hermeneutics and my sense of authority, is still highly relevant today.
Appreciate it. Man, I love you so much. Church Answers, I mean, the title says it all. That's where you're going to get a lot of answers. You need to be on Church Answers. The research, nobody's better than the Rainers on research and on helping your church and even in consultations. So please take advantage of everything Dr. Rainer has at Church Answers, all of his resources booked. Your latest book on prayer is what?
Pray and Go.
Pray and Go. All right. Take a look at it.
It's a 30-day reset on the priority of evangelism. Simple as that.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you, Dr. Rainer. I really appreciate it. Thanks for being on our program.
Great to be with you.
Good to be with you. We'll get together again soon. You and I'll go out. We'll go out some night and hear some good 1960s music, and we'll enjoy that.
I didn't sing the first 60s song except maybe a Burger King jingle, and I don't know if that's 60s or 70s.
I think it was 70s. By the way, where's the beef? All right. I'll see you later. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.